Welcome to Eye to Eye, the podcast of the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. My name is Sunil Mamtora, and I will be your host.
Today, I'm joined by Elizabeth Yu, an assistant professor at Eastern Virginia Medical School and an ophthalmologist with a special interest in cornea and anterior segment disease. Elizabeth, thank you very much for joining me today.
Oh, Sunil, thank you so much for having me. This is exciting to be on your podcast.
Just before we go into the topic which we're going to talk about, which is mainly focused on Demodex and blepharitis, could you just tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
Sure. I am a cornea cataract neurorefractive surgeon. My practice is within the eastern part in a multi-specialty practice in Virginia. It is very surgically heavy with cataract and kind of complex lens-based surgeries and some cornea. But what I've learned in the last 10 to 15 years is in order to be a really good cataract surgeon, you have to be extremely mindful of the ocular surface. And dry eye disease, having learned under Steve Flugfelder at Baylor College of Medicine when I was a fellow there and then stayed on faculty, it really just merged my passion between ocular surface and then all the lens-based surgeries, having learned and then being able to be partners with Doug Koch. So that's what I do, and it's just really exciting to see this rediscovery, or kind of rather an uncovery of, you know, all that is ocular surface disease in the last 5 to 10 years, and everything on the diagnostic side. There's certainly a wealth of knowledge there that we didn't know before, even when I was going through residency training.
Yeah, that's really interesting. In recent months and maybe even years, people are starting to talk about Demodex a lot more than they used to do in the past. I don't think it's something that has only just started. Why do you think that we're now talking about it and we never did in the past?
That's really, you know, that's so insightful, and it's so true, you know, that 80% of all the, you know, research that has even been published on the subject of Demodex has been in the last 5 years. So what I think really is happening is that as we understand that dry eye, if we were just to take dry eye as being tear film imbalance, that's just one arm under this bigger umbrella of ocular surface disease. They're not really synonymous necessarily, but ocular surface disease is kind of this trifecta of dry eye, allergies, blepharitis, and MGD. And so recognizing that so many symptoms, there's a commonality to them, whether it's redness, irritation, watering, itching, such common signs, but that has come to a point where so many of us are saying, you know what, our current therapies for dry eye aren't really managing what's going on. What other comorbidities or masqueraders are going on in the ocular surface? And that kind of, you know, that curiosity that lives in so many of us clinicians and clinician scientists is what I think is driving clinicians to really seek out other sources in order to better manage our patients.
How common do you think is Demodex blepharitis then?
So if we look, I did not realize this, but by the time you're a septuagenarian, Demodex is completely on everybody's skin, 100% of us. And it's not necessarily flora, because it's still a parasite. There is no symbiotic relationship that Demodex serves, but it doesn't infest the lids on everybody. Now, it does look like infestation, meaning more than maybe, you know, half to one mite per lash is what's shown to be in the literature. That leads to an infestation because these Demodex mites live within the lash follicles, and that can be in upwards of 60-80% of patients as we get older. Now, if you look at it as a whole, when you look at a recent study that was published or that is being published by Tarsus, but it was also performed in-house over the last 2 years, approximately 60% or 58% of patients walking into any clinic for any reason, for a comprehensive examination, post-op examination, surgical evaluations, actually have collarettes or that cylindrical dandruff that sits and cuffing the base of the lash, and that is completely pathognomonic or 100% correlated with edematic infestation. So, you know, there's literature that shows that that it would make sense that there is kind of this relationship where there's greater edematic infestation in older patients. Rather, when we look at, you know, some studies, though, that can even be controversial, because I know I anecdotally see it in about half my patients who are coming in for LASIK evaluations, and they're younger patients. It's been seen in pediatric patients, but I suspect because the density of how many collarettes are actually within the lash follicle and at the lash base is just not as abundant. So most clinicians are missing it in younger patients. What I thought was 20% of patients, you know, with Demodex infestation in my older patient population, now that I just have them just look down to actually evaluate what's going on at the lash base of the upper lid margin, it's about 3/4 of all my patients on any given day, but we're not looking because there's not great treatment options. And so we're not driven to look for it unless someone is coming back for a third, fourth evaluation, not satisfied with their actual ocular surface disease treatment. And that's who we usually are finding it in.
Sure, yeah, I can completely relate to that. And once I realized what Demodex was and the signs that you can see, we call it the toilet roll sign, you know, that cylindrical dandruff, which you can just see on the lash follicle itself. But once I knew about Demodex, I found that I was diagnosing it in so many more patients, those patients who were just coming backwards and forwards to the eye casualty clinic with ocular surface disease symptoms for years. Once they had a diagnosis of Demodex and you treat them with, you know, the only treatment which there is available to us, which is tea tree oil wipes, a few months later they were coming back and saying, I can't believe how good I feel compared to the last few years. So how do you manage a patient with Demodex blepharitis?
Yeah, so I can't wait for there to be an actual prescription therapy for this that can actually really eradicate Demodex, because right now, just like you mentioned everything, there's no standard or gold standard for treatment. You know, tea tree oil based treatments are kind of mainstay, and they're all kind of over the counter. Depending on how severe the disease is, I either just do tea tree oil wipes, because at least the commercially available wipes, it's like a set concentration. I kind of know what its efficacy profile is going to look like. I have a sense. For those who have more moderate disease where even 50% of their lashes are involved, I'll have them do like a micro blepharoexfoliation treatment, a Blefex, just to debulk the collarettes or the toilet paper sign, toilet roll sign. just to help the tea tree oil wipe to penetrate the lash follicle more readily to get to the actual Demodex mites, which are living in the base of the lash follicle. And then if there's MGD, you know, again, just debulking the debris and getting rid of the biofilm that might be covering the meibomian glands. So hopefully I can get the tea tree oil to get within the actual meibomian glands and help any mechanical obstruction that the Demodex might be causing in the meibomian glands themselves. But as we know, the life cycle of Demodex is constant. It's only like 2 to 3 weeks long, right? So, you know, you can do a true like 4 to 6 week treatment where you're being aggressive, where you have them do the wipe, keep the actual active ingredient onto the lids for about 5 minutes, and then have them wash it off or wipe it off or whatnot. But they're going to have to maintain it because of the life cycle of the Demodex. So then after 6 weeks, I'll have them do it every other day. But compliance is a major issue, because tea tree oil, for the most part, doesn't feel super great. You know, it in itself from application number one burns, especially with patients who are more symptomatic and more erythematous, their eyes are more inflamed. So there is that part to it. And in the very rare patient who has significant severe disease, where I'm seeing lash loss and I'm seeing corneal scarring or neovascularization, I'll do a pulse dose of ivermectin orally, which has a very short half-life, but just to kind of, you know, get everything jump-started. And I'll do 2 weeks of that, so once a week for 2 weeks, plus the Blefex, microblepharic exfoliation, plus some form of a tea tree oil wipe.
Just for the UK listeners who might not know what Blefex is, could you just explain what that is?
Oh, absolutely. So it's almost like a rotary tool that is on a rounded mirror cell sponge, and it is automated. So when you press it, it almost rotates like a drill, or if you think of like our
automatic toothbrush, or
yes, like an electric toothbrush, except it's a Miracell head. So the Miracell head, it allows for the breakup of the biofilm that is actually covering almost like quote unquote what we would call like a polysaccharide plaque that covers over the meibomian glands, right? Because the orifice can also have an obstruction per se, where it's not just the meibum having a thickened expression, but the expressibility is affected because of the biofilm that we know lays over the lid margin. But two, also it helps to remove the anterior debris and the collarettes, as you know, they're pretty stuck on because they're coming out of the lash follicle. So it has to be something aggressive like, you know, a Blefex or some kind of rotary tool in order to kind of get and break up the actual cylindrical dandruff that's at the base of the lash.
So your regimen then is tea tree oil wipes once a day for the first 4 to 6 weeks. And then would you say every other day indefinitely?
Yes. Every other day indefinitely, especially for those who are symptomatic and experience symptom improvement or sign improvement, whether it's redness. And patients will say, "Doc, my lashes, they've come back," you know? So you don't even think about the lash loss that's actually associated with Demodex blepharitis. So there are multiple signs, not just, you know, the collarettes themselves, but misdirected lashes, loss of lashes, the thickened erythematous lid margins. And then there are some studies that correlate the mechanical obstruction and meibomian gland disease with a greater Demodex load. So there are all of these things that are connected. But, you know, I think once we have, again, something that proves to be very, very effective therapeutically, that's when we're going to really have the better and the best understanding of Demodex.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I might give patients a weak steroid, so Prednisone, FML, or hydrocortisone drops just at the beginning of the treatment to help with some of the symptoms. Do you ever consider that, or, you know, cyclosporine-based treatments at all?
Absolutely. I think steroids, especially because it can quiesce the eye, especially when there's the, you know, the inflammatory byproducts. So Demodex mites actually have no internal digestive system. Everything is external. So everything ingested is regurgitated, and then they have these chemical enzymes that are also excreted in order to break up and create digestion. Well, that creates the inflammation, and that's why Demodex, for example, actually is the cause of diseases like seborrheic dermatitis, seborrheic blepharitis, and it is the source etiology of type 2 rosacea. So it shows you that the inflammation that the Demodex induces can lead to these secondary problems. And so quieting the inflammation, I think, is great. What's also funny when you say that is, you know how we always say for dry eye disease, using some steroids can really actually help to be a good way to quiet them down while we're initiating some other therapy that takes a while to build up. And so you start them on a steroid, and they're like, "Doc, I felt great for the first 2 weeks, and then I started feeling worse again." So that's when I also, right there, that's almost a diagnostic sign from the patient that they're telling me that the inflammation felt better, but then, you know, the Demodex was a source of their disease, and it makes me say, oh, I need to be looking for it because there's something else. It's not just here from imbalance.
Do you think sometimes making that diagnosis of Demodex blepharitis is a bit tricky because are the collarettes always there? You know, you've said that there's a 100% correlation between having the collarettes and having Demodex, but what about patients who may have Demodex without collarettes?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, that information really does come out of a study by Gao. And it did show exactly that, that when you do have Demodex, when you do have collarettes, there's 100% correlation. But what about your patients where you're doing lid scrubs? Well, 50% of patients who are doing mechanical lid scrubs, they won't have collarettes, right? But 50% of these patients have Demodex mites. So just as you mentioned, partially treated Demodex can absolutely occur, but because they're partially treated, they still, you know, can be symptomatic because of the things that we mentioned. And, you know, they're just kind of keeping it sort of under control by that mechanical component of using a lid scrub or wipe.
Yeah, I find it really fascinating, and this may be a silly question, but why do some patients have so much Demodex infestation and are so symptomatic and others have significant infestation or are completely asymptomatic? Would you still treat the asymptomatic patient with Demodex that you can see?
Yes, that's a great question. And I think that all goes back to, for example, we know that sometimes there's great alignment in dry eye disease or great alignment with MGD where there's MGD and burning. But what about those who have a ton of meibomian gland atrophy and zero symptoms, or those patients who come in walking with like a 3 millimeter epi defect and zero symptomatology? I think the same exists for any OSD, that there will be, because of that neurotrophic component, and some will have a neuropathic component, you know, some will have very severe signs, very little symptoms. And also the reverse can occur, or the inverse can occur. And I think, unfortunately, that is, you know, a major enigmatic problem for clinicians, because it's not a, you know, a one-to-one direct correlation.
Do you think there's a reason why some people get Demodex blepharitis? Because I think I'm seeing it more often in children nowadays. The more closer I look, the more I see it. And I'm just wondering, is it hygiene? Is there a reason? Why are they getting this?
Sure. So it looks like hygiene of the lids is actually not at all correlated to Demodex infestation. Now, there is relationship to like the lid architecture changes that occur as we get older, right? And that kind of makes sense, where if there's more hooding and just the fat atrophy that occurs within the orbit. But just like some kids, even though it's not related to hygiene, they have a greater tendency towards flictenulosis and rosacea. I do think that there are certain skin types, diabetes and metabolic imbalances are associated with greater Demodex infestation, as well as autoimmune disease is connected. But, you know, so Demodex can occur much more in our older patient population, but it is, certainly is a reason for why we see chalazia in kids, recurrent chalazia, recurrent pterygia, and any kind of marginal keratitis, especially when there's rosacea involved. There's such a common theme where we find a definite infestation where over a third to half of the lid margin has collarettes.
It's probably something that we're just completely underdiagnosing.
I could not agree more. And that's what's so exciting about lotilaner 0.25%, which is currently in FDA studies and in phase 3 studies. The first phase 3 study, which is called Saturn 1, And it was presented at the ASCRS and currently in submission. It did demonstrate that cholera cure, which means that, you know, at least no more than two collarettes across the entire upper lash margin was seen in 44% of patients. But collarettes of 10 or less, or grade 1 or less, meaning no more than 10 across the entire upper lid margin, that was seen as a full cure or a clinically meaningful cure in 80% of patients at just using the lotilaner 0.25% drop solution twice a day without any mechanical rubbing for 6 weeks. And then looking at the different phase 2 studies, it stays where they are infestation free, and it takes 6 to 9 months where there's any meaningful recurrence. So there could finally be a treatment option within ocular surface disease where one part of it can be mitigated with a treatment where it's going to be maybe one round or two rounds per year, not chronic twice a day, four times a day type of treatments indefinitely.
That's really, really exciting. And that actually, you know, that brings us on to the more exciting part of this interview, which is talking about the upcoming therapeutic treatments for Demodex. So that's lotilaner, right?
Yes. Yeah, lotilaner.
What's the mechanism of treatment there, and where did that treatment come from?
Sure. So lotilaner comes to us from veterinary medicine. It is like ivermectin, which is an antiparasitic, except it just has a much, much longer half-life. And it's the most specific isoxazoline, which is the actual class of drug that it is. So what it does is it's a competitive antagonist for the GABA chloride channels. So it paralyzes the actual mite, and it's highly specific for invertebrates. So it only attacks the mites. But the implications for this is immense, because it'll take care of Demodex mites. And then potentially, you know, what other diseases could it potentially help systemically? You know, this could be a preventative medicine for Lyme disease, you know, things like that. So it's just very exciting to see that we may actually have a true treatment option with the lotilaner. And what is so unique about it is it has such a low adverse event profile. 92% of patients found the drop to be neutral to very comfortable, you know, over the entire 6 week course. And that's important to recognize, because some drops really sting in the beginning. Other medicines sting with greater use because of toxicity or preservatives or whatnot. And then also, like I mentioned, beyond just the actual cholera cure, the mite eradication, there was a statistically significant difference that was observed at day 14, but seen in about 70% of patients, where they started with an average of over 3 mites per lash to no mites per lash by day 43 or week 6. But the other part of it too is, the other thing that's unique is an actual sign, which is considered a symptom to so many of us, with redness, that there was a statistically significant improvement in redness that was observed in, you know, about 40% of patients. So that just shows you, redness just doesn't go away. That's an inflammatory, you know, byproduct that leads to the redness. So using an anti-infective really can help treat the entire kind of cascade of events that occurs from the Demodex infestation.
And I suppose the biggest question with regards to this new treatment is, when will it become available?
Great question. I think this is gonna, based on, you know, and obviously, you know, I can't tell the future, but based on where they're at with their second phase 3 study, I would say that in the U.S., it would probably come to market before 2024. So I suspect maybe 2023, and that would be great to have that information, you know, no one can see that part. And then I do believe they have... they're working in getting it approved in China, and then I'm not sure where else they're working on globally.
Well, hopefully they'll be working on bringing it to the UK as well, because that sounds very promising and something that I think we do desperately need. Elizabeth, I've just got one final question for you, if that's okay. And yet, when I'm telling patients that they've got a diagnosis of Demodex blepharitis and that Demodex is a parasite, understandably, patients become very frightened and scared and anxious about this. Do you mind me asking you, how do you explain to patients that they've got Demodex, and how do you explain what it is?
It is, you bring such a great point to this, because it is a very polarizing topic, and it can be very frightening the way, you know, it sounds. I mean, when you tell someone that they have a parasite, so I don't want to scare patients. I want to encourage patients, but I don't want them to do anything drastic. I've heard other clinicians tell me that their patients have come in where they've shaved their eyebrows off. I mean, true story. That's crazy, because patients, they don't recognize the implications of what this means. So I'll generally say, you know, we all have bugs in our skin. There are certain bugs that can actually infest the lash margins. It has nothing to do with lid hygiene. You could wash your eyes 10 times a day and do a beautiful job keeping everything clean and still have these bugs overgrow, because a lot of their activity is at night while we're sleeping, you know? So, but it is important for us to go ahead and do everything to sterilize the lid margin, and I'm going to recommend this and this treatment. And the reason for it is, one, I do believe it will help with the redness. Now, it may not take away all of your symptoms. We'll have to see, because so much of what goes on with dry eye and the lids, they can have a very shared group of symptoms, but it certainly can potentially only help us in our journey. And if it is a surgical evaluation patient, which is the more common patient that I see, I'll let them know that these bugs, we don't want them to concentrate or cluster around the lids while we are getting them prepared for surgery. I would like to sterilize them as much as we can. And that seems to be a nice balance. It's complete honest, completely true, but yet said in a way that patients are not scared by it. So I generally don't use the word parasite. I'll either say microbes or bugs.
That sounds very sensible. Well, Elizabeth, that's been a really incredible half an hour. I've learned so much, and I'm sure the listeners will have done too. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me.